Okay, well, I'm the next speaker in this session. I'm Greg Bruland with the University of Hawaii Manoa. And I'm excited to share with you all today some research that my co-authors and I have been doing related to diffuse reflectance spectroscopy in Hawaiian agricultural soils for soil total carbon assessment. So just a brief introduction to diffuse reflectance spectroscopy if some of you are not familiar with this method. In recent years, there's really been an increased demand for techniques to quantify soil total carbon and other soil properties over space and time with increasing resolution. And there are some issues with the traditional analyses. Some of the methods, such as loss on ignition or combustion or dichromate oxidation, are very labor-intensive and time-consuming. They're costly. And also, especially with the dichromate oxidation, you produce toxic byproducts that labs and universities are not so eager to deal with anymore. And visible near-infrared and mid-infrared diffuse reflectance spectroscopy address some of these issues and provide a technique that is rapid and relatively inexpensive once you have purchased the instrument, and also is are non-destructive analyses. And I kind of liken this method to a type of fingerprinting method. And just as everyone in this room has a unique fingerprint, every soil also has a unique spectra when scanned in the VNIR or the MIR range. And just like we use fingerprints diagnostically, we can also use these spectra to get us information about a variety of different soil properties. So I want to say a little bit more about Hawaiian soils and agriculture before proceeding. Due to the extremely high climatic and topographic and environmental variability that we have across the Hawaiian Islands, and then also taking that environmental variability and overlaying it across the island age gradient, where we have soils that are highly weathered, millions of years old on the island of Kauai, compared to much younger, more recent lava flows on the island of Hawaii, we get tremendous soil diversity across this island chain. For example, we have 10 of the 12 soil orders are present in the main Hawaiian islands. Now, there are some interesting things also going on with agriculture in Hawaii. Up until kind of the late 90s, early 2000s, agriculture was really dominated by kind of the big two, sugarcane and pineapple. And those have largely scaled down and moved on to other places. And what we're seeing is this transition to a more diversified agriculture, in some cases even transitioning from the conventional agriculture to an organic agricultural system. A variety of different crops are being grown now. Some of this former sugarcane and pineapple land is also transitioning into grazing land or also to urban development. And so with all these changes in agriculture, there is a real interest amongst growers and farmers to be able to kind of quantify changes in carbon content in the soil with changes in tillage practices and management. So due to the soil diversity, also kind of the changing nature of agriculture, I think it makes Hawaii a really excellent kind of model system for looking at this this technology and new method. So the objectives of our project were threefold. We first wanted to employ both VNIR and MIR diffuse reflectance spectroscopy to scan archive soils from the NRCS National Soil Characterization Database, and these soils are stored in Lincoln, Nebraska. And then after doing that, we wanted to collect new samples from agricultural fields in Hawaii under different soil types and management systems to kind of complement the data that we were able to get from the archive. And then finally, we wanted to calibrate and validate these chemometric models for total carbon prediction with our diffuse reflectance spectroscopy methods. And we were testing two main hypotheses with this research. And the first one, what we expected was that features from the fundamental vibrations in the MIR range would provide better predictions of total carbon than features from the combination or overtone regions in the VNIR range. And a number of other studies in Africa and South America and other places have shown this to be true, and we thought we would see similar trends with our Hawaiian soils. And then a second hypothesis was that due to this high diversity of Hawaiian soils that I mentioned earlier, we thought that perhaps subsetting the data, and that could be by taxonomy, soil order or suborder, or by total carbon content, perhaps segregating the mineral soils with more highly organic soils, or even grouping the data by textural classes would help us with our predictions. So in March of 2010, we spent a week at the NRCS Soil Archive in Lincoln, Nebraska, and the archive contains approximately 1 million soils from 90 different countries. We were really focused on the soil samples from Hawaii and from some of the other Pacific islands. And we were able to sample and scan with our VNIR instrument samples from the O and A horizons from about 150 unique pedons in the Hawaiian Islands. And we also chose 17 pedons where we scanned the full profile, going from the O or A horizon all the way down to the bed to bedrock. These were for some more agriculturally important soils, kind of benchmark soil series. And this is a map just showing the locations of these samples across the Hawaiian Islands. Fortunately, we did have this kind of latitude and longitude coordinate data so we could plot where those soils were located. And one thing you notice while looking at this was that a lot of the samples, we had good coverage on Hawaii Island and also fairly good coverage on Maui, but not very many samples in the archive from Molokai, Oahu, or Kauai. That doesn't mean that those samples exist, but a number of the samples that have been collected were completely used up as NRCS did all their analyses. So these were the ones that had remaining sample and we were able to access. So with our Hawaii field-based sampling that we did this summer, we really focused on increasing our coverage on the south shore of Kauai, which you can see here, also the east shore. Central Oahu, which is a very important agricultural production area, south shore of Oahu, and got a few more samples from Molokai and from central and western Maui. And these are just some photos of what some of these sites look like. In the bottom left and bottom right, you see kind of the traditional sugarcane and pineapple, and then here are some of the various other crop types and land uses that you'll see. And we were able to sample across those all 10 orders, and I think we had 27 different crop or land use types. And so now this map shows both the samples from the NRCS archive. Those are shown with the circles and color-coded by order, and then samples from our Hawaii 2010 field-based sampling shown with the squares, and again coded by order. So we really, I think, improved our coverage on especially Oahu, Kauai, and Molokai. And this just breaks things down a little bit further by soil order. What you can see, really, we had the most samples from the andesol order, which you expect given the volcanic nature of a lot of these soils. We didn't really spend a lot of effort trying to get more andesols in our Hawaii-based field sampling. We really worked on trying to pick up mollisols, oxisols, and ultisols, as there's a lot of agriculture on these soil orders. And then also, there were no vertisols in the NRCS archive, and so we targeted some of these vertisols on Kauai and Oahu that are under agricultural production right now. So in terms of methods, the samples were dried and then 2-millimeter sieved, and then we took subsamples for lab total carbon by the traditional combustion method, scanned those also with our VNIR instrument, and then ball milled subsamples, and then those were scanned with our MIR instrument. And for the VNIR, you can see the wavelength range there. We used an ASD AgriSpec, and for the MIR, you can see our either wavelength or wave number ranges, and we used a Varian FTIR 2000 instrument to do that scanning. And in terms of data analysis, we're looking at a variety of different chemometrics method. I'm just going to talk about some of the results from the PLS regressions that we used to relate the spectra to the laboratory total carbon values. And we're in the process of testing a variety of different pretreatments of the spectral data that you can see listed there. And we've just started out kind of doing cross-validations, but we're going to move into more of an independent validation as more of the data becomes available. So moving into results, this is a histogram of our total carbon data. And what you can see is that the majority of the sites have total carbon that's about less than 10%. But we do have, especially in the archive, kind of a wide range of soil total carbon values going up to as high as about 60% carbon. And we just have our Hawaii field data for Oahu. So we're still waiting to get the data from Kauai, Molokai, and Maui, and that's going to kind of populate this histogram a little bit further for the Hawaii 2010 values. And this is our spectral library for the VNIR spectra. And we've got wavelength on the X, reflectance on the Y. And I've just picked out four spectra at random and colored them so that you get to see kind of the general patterns here. You can see this spectra in red shows very low reflectance across the entire wavelength range, not a lot of features. Again, these are the combination and overtone features that we see here. Then the spectra in orange, you can see slightly higher reflectance and a few more combination and overtone features. Moving up to blue, where we've got higher reflectance, the intensity of the features is starting to increase. And then the final spectra in green with considerably higher reflectance and more intense features. And one of the things we've just started to do is to kind of break down the data in terms of soil order. And I'm just showing four of those 10 orders. What you can see here, generally, the spectra for the andisols and the oxisols are fairly consistent. There are a few outlier samples, and we're kind of looking into why those are so different. And then you compare those to histosols and mollisols. Of course, we do have different sample sizes across these orders, but even with that smaller sample size, the histosols and the mollisols are showing more spectral variability than some of these other orders. And we're looking into kind of what is driving that, what are the chemical properties and other features influencing those spectra. And then this is our MIR spectral library. And what I've changed the x-axis now, I'm showing it in terms of wave number. That's usually the convention when you're in the MIR range. But I've also put up the wavelength values for those of you who are more used to dealing in terms of wavelengths and nanometers. There is some overlap with our VNIR here, kind of at these wavelengths or wave numbers. You can see these spectra, there's a little bit more noise in the MIR spectra than in the VNIR spectra, especially at some of these early wave numbers or the later wave numbers. And there are a couple regions that I've masked out. These are regions that are very noisy, look like they're not going to be all that useful in terms of our chemometrics, but that still leaves us with a lot of wavelengths and a lot of information, even if we are masking those ranges out. And again, it looks like there's a lot of variability and differentiation across these Hawaiian soils in the MIR region. So we've just started to get into some of the chemometric analyses, and I'm just showing some of our preliminary results. The upper graph is showing results from our models that we've done for with the VNIR spectra, and what I've got on the x-axis is the measured total carbon values based on the combustion, the laboratory combustion analysis, and then on the y-axis is the predicted carbon based on our chemometrics and VNIR spectra. And I've put the one-to-one line there dashed in red. You can see how the regression line kind of lines up nicely with that one-to-one line. And we're seeing fairly robust models in the VNIR. We were a little bit surprised that we were doing this well in the VNIR. And then down here, the same type of figure for our MIR spectra here. And we're doing slightly better in terms of R squared, and our regression line is right on that one-to-one line. So to conclude, we have scanned over 150 samples from the Hawaiian Islands and some other samples from Pacific Islands as well, from ONA Horizons. We've sampled about 90 sites from 27 different crop types across Kauai, Oahu, Molokai, and Maui. And our diffuse reflectance scanning is underway in addition to the total carbon analyses. And it looks like our preliminary PLS modeling, we're getting some pretty good results with that. Our hypothesis was that we would be better in the MIR region than the VNIR, but it looks like both regions are appearing to be fairly robust for total carbon predictions. And a few other things that we want to do as we go forward. We especially want to look at how different spectral pretreatment methods affect the chemometric modeling and the output and the relationships. We also are really interested in kind of calibrating and validating the models from our NRCS archive data with our field collected samples from this summer. And we do have data from some other properties as well. There's some loss on ignition data from the archive samples, also some textural data, iron, and a few other properties that we're interested in seeing how well we can model those as well. And also, we've yet to kind of look at the issue of subsetting, which got at hypothesis two. And then the ultimate goal is to finalize these models for use in routine processing of new samples at our Agricultural Diagnostic Service Center at UH Manoa. So I certainly want to thank our funding source, the USDA TSTAR program, and acknowledge the folks at the NRCS lab in Lincoln, Nebraska, who were really instrumental in helping us gain access to those samples, and also some other folks with NRCS in Hawaii and UH Manoa, and of course our landowners and managers and extension agents that got us access to the sites. So with that, I'll take any questions.
The samples that you analyzed around the spectrum, what do you think about the percent carbon and percent silt sand and silt, and how do they affect the readings that you get from the spectrum?
Yes, there's certainly, carbon isn't the only thing that's affecting the spectra. A variety of other factors are playing into that. The mineralogy, the particle size, a variety of other factors play in there. It's difficult to speculate on that right now. We're going to see, if we can predict some of the textural properties. And also, one of the other things that we're going to do with the chemometrics is also really be able to look at which wavelengths are the most powerful in terms of the predictive models. And once we identify those wavelengths, then we can track that back down to kind of the bond that are associated with those wavelengths. And whether that's a carbon-carbon bond or a carbon-oxygen bond or an OH bond, and then we can go back and try to relate that back to some of the information about particle size or mineralogy.
What kind of root mean squared errors did you get?
For those, for the chemometric models, off the top of my head, I don't know that I can say. They were fairly low, and I can't.
Do you think the bit sensitive enough to detect changes in carbon due to sequestration and management practices?
Yeah, that's a very good question, it may be that, it seems like some of the other talks that I've seen and papers that I've read are saying that, to be able to detect some of these changes, it does take, maybe 10 years at a minimum, for that temporal kind of change to play itself out. I think with this technology, that's a really a question that we're hoping to get at. And see whether or not we are able to pick up some of these changes. We know the locations of all of these samples, and this could serve as a nice baseline data set where we could go back 5 years from now or 10 years from now, resample some of these sites, and see if, in fact, there are differences. So I think it's with the data we have right now, I'm not sure that we're able to completely get at that, but we can at least start to kind of build a baseline data set that we could then go after that, you know, going forward.
You have a great range of carbon, which helps a lot with R-squared if you consider limiting just to ranges of carbon found in agricultural soils and look at that.
Right. Well, and these were, most of these are from agricultural soils. So we do have in Hawaii, there is agriculture on histosols or kind of pholous soils, some macadamia nut orchards and other crops are growing on in these high carbon soils. Yeah, and that is one of that kind of gets back to the hypothesis too, the subsetting hypothesis, and you know, taking a cutoff, say, of 10% carbon or 15% carbon, seeing how well we do with that versus the 15 to 60% carbon. We've done a little bit of that with some other data sets, and it does look like we're doing slightly better at the higher carbon range, and we don't do as well with the lower carbon range. We haven't really had a chance to, a lot of this data is kind of hot off the press. We've just got it, and so we haven't had a chance to look at that with this data set. But that's one of the things we want to do going forward.
You showed a graph there, speaking about the temporal chain in the carbon, you showed a graph there of the data that were from NRCS lab and the one that you sampled currently.
Mm-hmm.
And there was almost a striking difference that half, the ones that were coming from the current sampling were almost by half compared to the one that were previously estimated by the NRCS.
Was that the I think the histogram, and that's an incomplete data set from our Hawaii field data. That's only showing the samples from Oahu. So we have, that's maybe 25 to 30. There's still you know, another 60 or so, 50 or 60 samples that still need to be analyzed there.
It's a big difference. So I'm wondering, I mean, what's the reason for that difference? Is it just management, or is it just storage of the samples, or Just thinking out loud.
I'm not sure what you know, what's driving that. One of the things we did analyze some of the NRCS samples on our instrument at UH Manoa, and we got very good, you know, correlations, you know, with our total carbon values that we get off our instrument and the ones that they're getting. So I don't think it's an instrument difference. It may be a management difference. It may be, you know, some of those samples were taken back in the 60s and 70s, and so there, you know, certainly, you know, management has changed over that time period. We may have been, you know, causing high decomposition rates for carbon there with those soils. This study doesn't get at that temporal question as, you know, as well as I would like.
Yeah,